Nats could have gone with Ethan Holliday, shortstop, third baseman. Could have gone with Cade Anderson, pitcher from LSU. But they went with Eli Willits, a 17-year-old high school player from the state of Oklahoma. That seemed to surprise some, but it was not, I don't think, a draft with anywhere near a consensus on who the top pick should have been. Bobby Blanco covers the team for Masson. He joins us right now. You can follow Bobby on X at Bobby_Blanco. Bobby is a Terp, and he is a Gonzaga Purple Eagle as well. So, last night, they're on the clock, number one overall. What percent chance would you have given that they would have called out Eli Willits' name?
I would have given that a smaller percent chance. I think there was a group of five or six guys that had an equal, well, not equal, but like made up the percentage pie, if you will, of who they could pick. And I think, you know, Cade Anderson and Ethan Holliday definitely took a majority of that pie. But the fact that they went, let's call it the field, those other four or five guys, is not that surprising, I don't think. Just because, like you said at the top, there wasn't a clear-cut number one. Like, there was no Paul Skeen, Dylan Cruz. There was no Jackson Holliday, even though his brother had him as the top prospect in this draft class. There was no clear-cut number one. There was a group of six guys, and I think as it got down to it, you know, we heard less and less about Ethan Holliday going 1-1 to the Nationals, and we heard more about Eli Willits coming up. I'm not surprised that they took one of the prep bats. Since Mike Rizzo was dismissed a week ago, I thought all week that it was less likely they were going to take a pitcher and they would go bat or a position player and one of those prep bats. So you could say maybe a little surprised that it wasn't Ethan Holliday, but I'm not surprised too much that it ended up being Eli Willits, even though I know a lot of people are or were.
All right, three things. First is this. Do you think the fact that Willits will be cheaper to sign Cade Anderson and Ethan Holliday, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're Boris clients and they're older players, obviously. Do you think that could have factored into the decision at all?
I think it definitely did. I don't think we'll ever hear anyone from the Nationals come out and say that publicly, but I do think that it is part of this new regime, and new regime meaning the Danny Haas and Brad Selick, who they hired a couple of years ago. This is only their second draft, but that is part of their mojo in terms of going into draft. I think you could argue, should you take that approach when you're drafting 1-1, that's a different conversation, but it is part of their strategy of maybe going a little underslot in the first round so you can sign guys that fall out of the first round in the second and third round, particular high school players that have strong commitments to top programs. I do think that did play a role that, you know, Willits will not cost as much probably as Ethan Holliday or Cade Anderson. And you're right, both of those guys are Forest guys and Willits is not. So I think that does play a role and a factor into it. I think that's fair to say.
All right. Second question on Willits. Do you think that this pick changed with the firing of Mike Rizzo?
And that's another question that, you know, I tried to get an answer out of when we spoke to the guys from the Nationals war room last night. They didn't really say, of course they always said that, you know, we've honed in on him for a while. He was one of our top guys. I don't think that Mike Rizzo leaving, it's hard to say. I do think that if Mike Rizzo was still here, there was a higher chance that they would have taken one of the pitchers because Mike Rizzo loved starting pitching. Mike Rizzo always said you could never have enough starting pitching. And I think a guy like Cade Anderson would have been, you know, a little too tantalizing for him to pass up at 1-1. So when Rizzo left, I thought it was less likely they would take a pitcher and more likely that they took a position player.
Is drafting Willits an indication that this is an even longer-term approach to the rebuild? I mean, is there less sense of urgency given that the time frame for him to get to the bigs is much longer?
I think that's a fair question because, right, he is only 17. When we spoke to him last night, he mentioned one of his goals, now that he's been drafted, is to reach the major leagues by the time he's 20, and that would be in 2028. That's 3 years from now. So that's a long ways away. So, you know, a lot of the conversation leading up to the draft was an argument for one of those college pitchers would be, hey, they could contribute at the major league level next year. And Willis has a much longer timeline because he's so young, because he's so raw. I don't know how much that factored into it, but it does kind of add to the story and paints this picture of, yeah, maybe they think that they are a little further away than they had previously thought at the beginning of the season.
All right, we're talking to Bobby Blanco from Mass, and actually a couple more questions on Willits. Does this say anything about C.J. Abrams and his long-term, presence on this roster?
It's hard to tell. I mean, it's not like when you draft a quarterback 1-1 in the NFL and you know that guy's immediately going to be your starter and whoever is already, in place is going to be moved to the bench. If you're looking at that timeline, like I just mentioned, that Willis would be, if he makes it to the majors by his 20, that'd be 2028. That would be C.J. Abrams, last year under contract. That would be, he'd be heading into a free agent after that season. So I don't know if, maybe they do come to a long-term deal. They have now 3 years to decide if they want to make C.J. Abrams a contract extension offer and make him the shortstop of the future. But if not, then they have this kid now at that time will be hopefully ready to step in and be their everyday shortstop and maybe the shortstop of the team. So I don't know if it says anything in the immediate about CJ's future with the team, but maybe it does down the line when as he gets closer to free agency and Willis is closer to his major league debut.
All right. Beyond some of the reasons we talked about, including maybe even upfront expense, why Willits? Tell us about the player.
Yeah, I mean, he was – all along, this is not just coming from the Nationals. He was all along kind of projected as the best overall hitter in this class. The bat-to-ball skills are elite. He doesn't really strike out. He stays within the zone. And he just uses the middle of the field really, really well. And he is an elite defender. He is projected to stay at shortstop. Ethan Holliday, a lot of people have him projected moving to third base, a corner outfield spot, maybe even first base down the line because he's built more like his dad, just that big, hulking, natural, slugging power hitter, whereas Jackson, his brother, is obviously more of an athletic up the middle infielder and has been able to stay in short second base for the Orioles. And Willits is more like that. He is going to stay at shortstop. He is athletic enough. His defense is elite. His glove is elite. He's got range. He's got speed on the base paths. And I think what, talking to the Nationals brass last night, the main thing was like all of their analytical view of him and their scouting view of him kind of merged and said this was the best player in the draft. He was the best hitter and the best fielder, and that's why they took him 1-1.
All right. What did they do in rounds 2 and 3, and was any of the, going much younger in round 1 a setup for what they might spend in round 2 and round 3?
Yeah, so in round 2, they took Ethan Petry, who is an outfielder from the University of South Carolina, just a pure power hitter. He probably projects more to move to first base or designated hitter a long term in his career, but he was hitting just absolute tanks with the Gamecocks. I think I saw a highlight last night circling around that he took Paul Skeens like 400-plus feet when he was like a freshman at Carolina. And Paul Skeens at LSU. So he has pure natural power, a lot of swing and miss, though, and the defense isn't really there. So you're getting a natural power hitter there. And then in the third round, they got a high school pitcher, Landon Harmon, who we spoke to this morning from Mississippi. He is considered one of the best prep arms in the country. A lot of people have already linked this to when the Nationals drafted Travis Sikora back in 2023. In the third round was the top prep pitcher of that class as well. We're able to kind of, I'm trying to think of their second round pick. Oh, it was there was Dylan Cruz and then Yo-Yo Morales, and then they went big on Sikora. Now, it's a little different because I think they're going to try to go under slot with Willits and then go over slot for Harmon. Harmon did say this morning that he's going to sign with the Nationals, so he pretty much already knows what his offer is going to be and he's going to sign it. So I would expect that to go over slot value. The slot value for that pick in the third round was a little over $1 million, so he'll probably get more than that to sign him away from his commitment to Mississippi State. But elite fastball, profile is a lot like Travis Sikora, really tall kid, really lean kid. Still has to like kind of grow into his body again coming out of high school, but could be an elite arm in this farm system pretty soon.
I looked this up before the show. I guess I was a little bit surprised, but I probably shouldn't be. But James Wood tonight is plus 400 to win the home run derby, and it's Cal Raleigh, I think, is plus 300, and then O'Neill Cruz with Pittsburgh is like between the two. So do you give him a decent shot of winning the derby?
I do, and I think because my whole thing with James in the derby tonight is his swing is so effortless, and you're taking so many swings in such a short period of time in the derby. I just wonder if a guy like Cal Raleigh is going to go so hard early on and then just get worn out and get tired. And we've seen this happen in past derbies where guys just go try to, you know, hit as far as they can early on in the derby, and then they get tired near the end. And with James's swing, it's so effortless. He can go the opposite way with a simple swing. He's homered at Truist Park before. The wall in right field is tall, but it's short. And then the wall in left center field, where a lot of his balls naturally go, is shorter. So I think if he stays within himself and gets his nice, easy swing off pretty easily, he could save some of that energy. And also, he hits balls really fast, right? So, like, if balls get out quickly, he'd be able to save some of his time in his round to kind of reset and rest up and not get too tired too quickly. So I do give James a pretty good chance tonight.
All right, last one, and I appreciate the time, and I appreciate you being available based on what I asked you. Thanks for that. Bobby's great. So the trade deadline, we're, what, 16, 17 days away from it. There's been some discussion that Mackenzie Gore could get dealt. This is, like, essentially the same time that Soto was dealt. Do you see that happening?
I don't. I just that would be a very bold move for Mike DiBartolo to do, you know, a couple of weeks into this job. He's, you know, I think everyone with the Nationals obviously right now is kind of managing, coaching, playing, and general managing, scouting, whatever, for their jobs. Because, you know, the Lerner family could decide to turn everything upside down by the end of the season. And right. I just think that would, one, take, you know, permission from ownership. I think ownership really likes McKenzie and views him as a long-term piece. And I think the Nationals themselves do too. So I don't think they think they are where they were back in 2022. I think they do see Wood coming along. They see CJ Abrams coming along, obviously McKenzie. I'm hopefully getting a healthy Dylan Cruz back soon. So I think they see a younger core more solidified than they did a couple of years ago when they traded Soto to build this young core. So that would really shock me if they decided to do that. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't pick up the phone and hear offers, but I would be surprised if they accepted one.
All right. The Nats have how many more picks today?
They have won every round. They don't have any extra picks, so they've already made a couple. So rounds 4 through 20 are today, and they've already selected another high school pitcher out of New York, a guy who throws heat but has some control issues.
Thanks, Bobby, for doing this. Appreciate it. Hope you're well.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Anytime. Appreciate it.
Bobby Blanco, everybody, at Bobby_Blanco on X on Twitter. Bobby covers the team for Masson. Zach Ertz had some very nice things to say about his current team. We'll tell you what he said when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. You can stream us on the team980.com or through the Odyssey app, and also you can check us out on our YouTube page. Subscribe it and like it when you get there.